Sorry, go on.
No, that's all right. It's, well, where was I? It's really looking at the infant's cues. So with that first assessment phase in that first day, we're really looking at the sorts of settling methods that we know are tried and tested, as we said, are evidence-based. So if it's a lot of hands-on that Bub's been used to, we might try to minimise that a little bit. But if the infant's unhappy and we're hearing distress cries, or we're watching the parent and the parent's feeling quite distressed, even though the infant may not be, we think that might be managing it quite well, we will tone that down and we'll tailor that and step back a bit and make sure that we're assessing mum, if mum's not travelling well. So that, do some more hands-on. So we really look at the approach on a settling instant as well,
mm-hmm.
but we'll show the family to start with, these are the sorts of strategies we can use. Because sometimes you come in and think, oh, I want to fix everything and I want to do it now. And most families feel that way because they come in and they are exhausted and tired, and it is a long process often. We do have families that come in on a cancellation, and they're absolutely, but if their process has been quite short, it may not be in their head, oh look, I don't mind how slow this is, or sorry, or how fast this is, but for some who've been waiting a long time, I want to fix it and I want to fix it today.
We were so grateful just to get in.
Just to get in, yeah. But then it's about, well, have a look at these settling methods. What do you think? Well, one parent might say, I want to go here. I want to be really hands-off and do some comfort settling. We're popping the child in the cot still awake, but obviously with those cues that they are tired,
mm-hmm.
and stepping out and listening and doing a lot of listening, hearing some whinging cry, and then determining what we need to do there. She might feel, Dad might feel that this is where we want to be. But once we've settled in and we've got here and we've done all the paperwork and then we try that, they might go, well, actually, I think I was a bit braver than I thought I was. I think we'll step back a bit. How about we do a bit of hands-on? And that's okay. Or they might have thought they might have been ready for hands-on for the infant, and that's really not good. We're really not feeling we can do that. We go back to the settling in arms and we take it step by step. So as much as we might have these great ideas that we want to fix this now, that's why you've come somewhere like here with that information, is the staff then can tune in on what are we seeing with the parents and the baby while this is happening, or the infant. So
an unbiased eye.
Yeah. Well, yes, because we might think that, gee, an 18-monther shouldn't be hands-on, should be able to be in the cot and do some relatively low levels of crying and not be distressed, definitely, but do a lot less hands-off. But if that's not what we're seeing, if the child's not matching and you've got to have that nice, perfect fit between what the child's doing and the parent's feeling, when you've got that working, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
So when you feel, I'm there, then you think, I'm right. You go back to whatever settling method gets you to that stage. And it might mean supporting mum with mental health or dad with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot that you saw with those questions that we asked.
Well, something that I noticed was a lot of the behavioural management was actually the parent's behaviour.
Absolutely spot on.
Much of it was mine.
It was. It's managing. It absolutely is, because your behaviour is the behaviour that needs to change. It's about coming in here and looking, what have I been doing? What have I been doing with settling, with feeding, with the routine in the day, with managing the girls' time, recognising when they're tired and when they're frustrated and what are their triggers? Then it is. It's about managing your behaviour around that.
No, so true.
It is. And once you've worked...
I kind of had that expectation, well, they're going to help the girls.
Yes.
Train the girls.
Yeah.
But it was really, no. Let's get you doing the right thing, and that's your behaviours will dictate their reactions.
And that can be quite confronting for some parents, because they come in and they think that it is about that. And they can feel that frustration that first day. You've asked me lots of questions. I've told you where I want to be. Just do it. And that's sort of... That's parenting centres of old. You know, where we did used to look after the children in a sense, that mum and dad would have a sleep and we would institute settling in those days and then virtually involve mum and dad that second day, because that's what we knew was, let's get the behaviour fixed. That happened many, many years ago, but that's exactly how centres like this first started, in a sense, was to really look at managing that child's behaviour. It's what we knew to be the right thing.
Well, I was surprised that it made sense as soon as I realised what was going on. I was like, oh, that actually makes perfect sense. So
it does.
Do some parents get defensive, though? Or?
Absolutely. Like I said, that first day or so, or sometimes what we call hump day, you weren't here on, a routine admission, say, from Monday to Friday, but your Wednesday to Sunday, whenever your hump day is, so the day that you're halfway there, you start to feel, hey, some things are working, some things haven't clicked in, And you start to, that's when sometimes you can get quite frustrated and go, we're not away on this trajectory that we thought we'd be. I thought we'd be about halfway or a bit further. We're not there. And you start to worry. And that's when parents can get quite angry, frustrated.
I was concerned because, as I said, the twin that was having the big problems was being absolute. And the third night in, she actually put herself to bed. She was the one who used to fight, kick, scratch, scream. Yeah. I would have to carry her down the hallway. The third night, she got up at the during the story time and said, "I'm tired, I go in bed." And again. So my only concern and frustration was we weren't addressing the one that I thought needed the help more, and that she probably wasn't going to learn. And then I had to reassure myself, saying, "Well, if I keep doing everything right,
because
we can keep this, hopefully keep this consistent
behaviour." And that's our behaviour. That's it.
But I was worried about it.
Teaching you the skills. You're the one we need to teach the skills, because if you're not here, and that's why it's great to have, if there's both parents looking after the children most times, it's great to have an opportunity to be father inclusive, to make sure usually it is the mother who's looking after the child most, and dad might come home at night, those sorts of things. So we make sure that we can factor dad coming in at night and being involved in the settling overnight, so that you have them both in the same place and agreeing, because we can support you or support the primary carer, and then you go home, and that could be sabotaged. It could be, that person hasn't heard the same information.
Consistent parenting is so important.
It is. And so for that instance with the girls, even you might have had both girls not playing up as such. They really could have been model children here. For that most of that time, we still would have taught you the skills. It would have been frustrating for you.
Very frustrating, because you feel like you're lying.
But they're so good. And then, but it's wonderful that at least you can see that's what twins do, don't they? They play tag team, don't they?
Oh,
it's your turn.
You're the bad girl now.
Yes, it's your turn. I'll have it a rest. Hands up, not me now. You're on, Jim.
You hand over the halo.
Yes, I'll have that. So...
Is there much difference between the age groups, or is it
the age groups?
I mean, I'm looking at this. Obviously, I didn't have exposure to what you do with infants. But
we're certainly aware that very young infants, and that's even though I say we don't specify under a certain age, we are aware that when infants are under 6 months, under 4 months, that we do respond a lot more quicker than we would with, say, a 9 to 12 month old, in a sense of within a settling approach. What type of approach, it really depends on the parent. But the length of time, we will start settling, and usually once about 45 minutes an hour is up, or we feel that, because we don't time everything, it's not about a timed approach, but we have in our head a bit of a marker. If the child's getting distressed at any time, let's pull the pin. But if we're travelling okay and we feel like we are learning techniques, mum and dad are taking it on, and we're getting somewhere and the child's responding really well, then we will clock watch you with, if the child hasn't settled, we'll clock watch and go, we won't go past that time frame, about 45 minutes an hour. If the settling's gone on for 20 minutes and we really feel we've escalated and the infant's quite distressed, we'll just get them up, comfort, cuddle, they might need a feed, they might need a play, and we'll start some settling again. So it's really about responding to cues.
And it's not about, I mean, a lot of people, when they talk about control crying, and they understand that control crying is bring them in bed, let them cry no matter what.
That's right.
And then going into, it's okay, and then leaving again. And I think what a lot of people miss is there are times when the baby is protesting being in bed, and there's times when the baby's distressed.
That's right.
I don't think they're seeing that distinction.
And what clouds that, do you think? What makes it so difficult for a parent to see?
I mean, you're sleep deprived, so it's hard to make judgment for a start.
That's right.
You're usually learning from books or the internet where they talk in absolutes rather exchange of grey and actually listening and understanding your babies. So.
Yeah, and that's it. If you're tired and exhausted, it's very hard to be clear and to see those signals. We used to do, control crying was where we, were at as well many years ago. It's not where we've been for a long time, but it's still that parents will still come away and say that they do control crying or those sorts of things. And
there's nothing
in our language. We've even gone through when we've set this up through family partnerships and C-frame that we've models of care that we've used to adopt this type of settling, is we involved our admin staff, our operational staff, so that the language in the centre changes, so that it's not, you shouldn't hear the word control crying. You should be hearing responsive settling. And now we've adopted that for feeding, and we're talking about a responsive feeding as well, so that the language and the culture of the place changes. Because it's not helpful to walk out your door and maybe someone says something to one of the operational staff that's cleaning the room or doing, you know, the work that they do on the floor, and a conversation's had about controlled crying. You know, it's just unhelpful. So we made sure that when we were doing this early work that we involved everyone throughout the centre. First call that comes through to book or, you know, to make an inquiry, and they use the word controlled crying, and the staff at the front desk know to explain to them what it means and what would happen here.
So how do your staff respond when you have a child crying? And your staff obviously, with Gypsy from about 3 months old, she had 9 different cries, and I could tell you every single one. I knew exactly what it meant from anywhere in the house.
Yeah.
Rapsy had 2. I'm either crying and whinging or I'm not.
Oh, okay.
So for her it was like that. But for your staff members, I mean, how do they tell the difference between distressed and whinging?
Well, what's great here is there's so much experiential learning that staff can do. Because as you saw, we have staff from students doing their university degree in child health, 2 very experienced staff. And we work in teams and in pods, just to give you a bit of sort of background, so that if we have, say, 5 families, and we work and we would go around and do rounds and things like that as a group. Within that, if we've got some new staff working there, they can be involved with settling the girls when you were here, for example. So a more experienced staff member and one of the new students could work together. And that way, it's actually explaining, it's an experiential learning where the staff will start to hear a cry and say, and let that less experienced staff member know, this is a such and such cry. Discussing it with the parent, what do they hear? Sometimes the parent says, well, it all sounds the same to me. But it's interesting, usually by the end of the week, they can usually discern some differences in the cries. And that's often regards, like you said, sleep-deprived, mental health situation. You know, that relationship that's going on. So
frustration, anger.
A lot of it's experience, having heard those cries, but still, you know, the key is treating every child as an individual too. And as you say, not that we get many triplets, but for twins and triplets, treating them as individuals. Gypsy does something completely different to Rapsody.
Yep.
And we need to be aware of that. And what she does today, she's not going to do tomorrow. Yeah. So it's and that's what's frustrating, of course, is that what might work on Monday, Tuesday, then we go tail up the next day. So we have to look at a different situation. Mm. And we'll go back to our assessment phase. If things just aren't panning out and we're thinking, okay, we've done all the assessment we've done and we've worked out exactly what sort of settling method or what needs to be looked at with routine and feeding. If we're just not getting there, we go back to that very early on. It's Monday when you come in or Wednesday when you come in, go through those notes again. Let's just go through that assessment. Did I miss anything? And now that we've built rapport with the family and hopefully have built their confidence and trust, then maybe some more information might just start coming out. Families are very, very honest, very transparent, very open when they come in. And we appreciate that, and we then can tailor a great program because of that. But we certainly respect that. We understand that they're often telling us information that they've not told anyone else before. So we sometimes need to, if that hasn't occurred on day one, and that client builds up that rapport, then, you know, in a couple of days, they'll certainly sit down and think, no, that's why this client wasn't queuing in, you know, mum wasn't queuing in with bub the way we thought by then, because these are thoughts and feelings that she's had for a very long time. And so, you know, there's a lot that can happen. But it's amazing how on Monday families do just come in.
It's funny because I look back in retrospect now and I can see all of the little things we did wrong because we had twins.
Yes.
You know, one would cry in the night, but instead of giving a chance to self-settle,
mm.
we were in like a shot, yes, not really for her, because we didn't want the other one to wake up. And you look back and go, well, all we were really doing is teaching the girls that we'll come. If you make a noise, have a whinge, we'll come straight to you.
That's right.
So then when we didn't, they escalated very quickly. And it was the behaviour. We were teaching them bad behaviour.
But you don't know.
And it was really our behaviour.
That's right.
Well, not the girls.
Yeah. But it's the same with it. You know, number 2 comes along, and of course you don't want to wake the older, you don't want that one to wake the older child.
Yep.
So we see that a lot too. So, you know, it's really set the tone. Or it might be just a single child, but, you know, dad's manual work and mum says, I don't like him to get up during the night, or that's what we've decided as a couple that that I'm looking after the settling overnight because of the type of work he has, or he might be fly in, fly out dad, all sorts of situations. So they're very conscious of getting up to the child too quickly because they're worried about their partner waking and things like that. So that's why we really need to have them both on board, both here, so they can support each other in that. So, well, really, we're looking at a finite time. If you invest a few weeks in this process, then really there should be no reason, unless the child becomes unwell or goes through a different sort of emotional developmental stage sometimes when they're going through a different stage and they're starting to walk or going to, you know, it's just like going to preschool that first time and you wake up during the night or you have nightmares or sleepwalk and things like that because your mind becomes more active. Well, as a child develops more emotionally too, they start to think about those things. They might start walking and then they start walking, you know, running, going around their cot in their sleep and taking that on.
Mm-hmm.
So you find that they can be more wakeful then, and we don't respond straight away. We listen, we see what they're doing. There are stages throughout now where you'll... was one of them sick last night? You said you were
up. Gypsy's coughing.
Yeah.
Just coughing and coughing.
But once she's well...
And she kept getting up again because she was, she'd hear the wind. She was awake, she'd hear the wind howling.
Yeah.
She'd get frightened, so she'd run down the hallway. It's like, okay, maybe back to bed. It's okay.
Yeah.
But she was frightened and sick, so it was...
That's right. And that's what she needs you.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, you do the right thing.
So I sat with her for a little while, which we haven't done at all since we've been here. But
yeah,
she was frightened, so it was
that's
like...
That's right. Well, if you go on holidays and you're in a different situation, then you'll find you've got to bring out those tools again, that little toolkit, and just think, now, what have I used before?
We went away for a weekend, and we had the same routines. So
that's good.
And they actually adapted really, really well. Now, how... I know I'm asking you to generalise a little bit with this question, but... do you often see results very quickly? I'm surprised how often the kids can adapt.
Oh, it's amazing. I suppose it is a tricky question because some infants will come in with a long history of, you know, settling issues and first night sleep through. Others, you know, haven't had a significant history and then take more than a week, and we give the parents strategies in that to continue at home, make sure child health in the area is contacted. We always send the summaries out, the one that you take home. We send that exact link, goes to the, you know, your referring agent, so they're aware that this is what's happened while you've been here. They might need some more follow-up. So it really is that piece, how long's a piece of string, and determine why often we're perplexed. You know, we might sit around and say, this, you know, this infant's been really quite difficult to settle, and it could be temperament.
Could be physiological.
Physiological, that's right. And that's why we really don't try and paint a particular picture that this will be fixed in the 5 days or 4 nights, or that it is part of the process for you, like I said, looking at your behaviour, how you change that behaviour, how you can do this for the long term, and setting you up so you can go home feeling you're the best person to be able to do it for your children. So you can go home and replicate that as best you can in your home environment. Where, like I said, in the old days, we did that work. We settled the children, were wonderful. Wonderful at it. Got them settling and handed over to mum and dad. But they really didn't have, often just mum, really didn't have a long sort of time to experience that and really understand what it was about. So this is the better way.
Oh, much better.
I agree, this is the better way, having worked in the other sort of, but that's what we knew and know now that... you know, yes, there's always some that just perplexes them. We get to the end of the week and go, don't know what it is, but that infant's a lot more difficult. And sometimes it's reassuring for the parent. We're very open and transparent. We'll say,
for some parents,
that's real. You know, this is going to be hard. This is going to take a few more weeks for you. Call in help. You know, call in as much help as you can for this next week. And sometimes they ring us back and say, because we don't continue the feedback because of the process of going back to your child health for support.
Mm-hmm.
We don't link in, we don't do any follow-up calls, those sorts of things at all. So, but sometimes we'll get a card or a letter or whatever that will say,
I've been first night, one, to be honest.
Yeah. First night. Got home. It's fantastic. And yet not the four here, but as soon as they got
home. We had one or two, if so-so nights, but I thought they were just testing the boundaries or weren't 100% sure, but they adapted very quickly.
I think sometimes too, infants, you know, it's a temperament, or they're so aware that this is such a different, strange environment. Once they come home and settle into their environment, maybe there's a lot of cues. Maybe mum and dad are more settled there. You know, there's a lot more back home, routine, same food. It is hospital food here.
Oh, well, Rapsy wouldn't eat anything anywhere.
Oh, okay.
But see, Rapsy's a homebody. Rapsy is out for more than an hour or two. She goes, go home now. I want to go home.
Oh.
She's the outgoing twin at the moment, but she just likes being at home.
She feels safe and secure. Whatever it might be,
yeah.
But yeah, that is a That is a
In 6 months now, I'll probably be going, I wish you were up to love time.
I know, and then you'll find Gypsy will be the one who likes home. And
Is there much difference in the strategies when there are physiological or conditions involved?
So most common condition we have is reflux. I mean, most parents will talk about the infants with reflux or colic. And really we manage as much as if the paediatrician has diagnosed that it is reflux, then we keep them on their medication and continue with the settling methods. Sometimes you find once they're more settled, then you'll find that they often can reduce or go off their medication completely. But once they're a more settled infant, their gut's more settled, they're calmer, they're more relaxed. Yeah. The environment around them's more calm and relaxed too. You'll find that often the symptoms will just take their natural course, because it's quite natural for an infant to have reflux, esophageal reflux, and to be colicky.
My parents fostered for, I like to say, I'm the eldest of 42. So we had a lot of pre-adoption babies. And I knew more about reflux before I was 16 than most people know in their lives.
There are most common conditions that come in here, and we really work closely with them. If our paediatrician needs to ring their ped or GP to say, look, can we take them off medication at least for a period of time so we can see how much of this infant crying and inconsolable crying is related to being so overtired and no routine and those sorts of things. And then once we start to work with that, yes, we may need to keep the medication on or we may need to bring it back in, but I tell you, most times they go off the medication. And that's why it's great that we have our paediatric support here, so that we can do that. But we'll have babies that have, undergone heart surgery or, have had significant heart issues, and once we've had the all clear from the specialist, then they come in and we'll... Because obviously you can imagine a very unwell child for a long period of time who's been hospitalised for a number of times. This is another institutionalised sort of place, in a sense, and we wear uniforms.
Yeah.
So
they're out of their comfort zone.
So when we've got the all clear that medically they're okay, then it's about really explaining that first day with the parent, this is what we're all about. And they often will make some phone calls before coming in too, just to reassure themselves this is the right place. Some families say, look, we need this more than anything.
Everything is about reassurance nowadays, isn't it? It's reassuring the parent that they can do it. It's reassuring the babies and the kids
that they're safe.
Sleep is fine, everything is good. Yeah. Everything is about reassurance, really.
It is, verbal, non-verbal. And so if we need to pick up a crying baby and give them and comfort them and put them back in for some settling, that's what controlled settling didn't do. We timed, it was a timed approach that regardless of what the infant was doing and how the parent was feeling, we knew at a certain time I have to go in and pat and whatever, then walk out the door. So regardless how the infant responded to me doing that, I came out. And regardless of where the infant was at, for me to walk in the door.
There was no individual context?
No.
It was one size fits all.
Yeah, absolutely was. And I suppose when you look at back then when it did, the reason it came out was because parents were frustrated and needed an answer. And I suppose that, it was, there were other methods around that timed approach that really gave parents an opportunity to say, I don't have to, if I can't carry, physically, psychologically carry my baby around everywhere, be with them all the time, to settle in, it's okay to walk out of that room for them to start to self-settle.
Yep.
So we've gone from that extreme.
It was an okay theory, but with poor application.
Because now we know about the infant attachment and the brain development, and we've brought that right back to sitting where I think is a really good place where we can support parents in supporting the infants with that process. So I do like where we're at this stage. And that's why I think you could talk to any staff member up there, as you said you did. And as much as there are little variations on what we do through experience and what they've seen, and which I think makes it more of a journey, a positive journey for you, is that it isn't about a book and here's a one approach and they sound like robots. Yep. It's about the work they do, the work they love, and that obviously comes out in
one of my frustrations with most parenting books. It's black and white. Whereas there's some good ones where they go, well, here's some strategies, but keep in mind.
That's right.
And if they're crying, if they're distressed, you go in. Screw everything else.
That's right. Go in. And don't, beat yourself around the head because you went in either. Go back out and go, that was okay.
Parental guilt. I think that's so misunderstood at times.
Oh, it is.
And
it is.
But the internet doesn't help, because it makes us feel like bad parents constantly.
No, it makes us more accessible to information that is not evidence-based, and you'd be clear here that whatever we give you, you know, with information we've provided here has been. So.
Yep, and I like that. Personal question. One of my friends in America has a little baby at the moment. She's having problems settling him, but he's got mild autism.
Oh, okay.
Does that make any real difference? It's just really the same strategy, isn't
it? I'm certainly not versed in, you know, the intricacies of mild. I would, as long as the child is healthy and well, you know, really, this is all about emotional attachment. This is about being there emotionally for them.
If anything, he's probably more attached to routines and probably adapt.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Once you adapt to the routine, I think he'd probably be better for it.
Yeah. It would be, I think, I can't see it being of any concern because we have a lot of children come through with
I was just asking on her behalf because
I've spoken generally about
our experience here.
Yeah.
She was just, but does it change? Does it? And she was just second guessing herself.
No, and I think there's a point in time when a parent says, hey, whether it's been a long medical history, like I said, and often it's a heart condition or something significant that a child's had, and of course the parents have had that journey where it's really been quite difficult, and or long history of IVF or whatever it might be, you know, this. There might be a point where the parents say, well, now we're past that point, we really need some support with locking in, like you said, a routine or being able to step back a bit now. We've been there and really worn ourselves out, and maybe it's them making the decision, hey, it is still safe to step back and get some guidance on what to do.
That's good. Because our girls love their new routine, love the fact that they know that, hey, we have dinner, we sit and we talk, then we have a shower, then we have reading or stickers for half an hour and then to bed. And
they thrive on that, don't they?
The
older child, I mean, you talk about routine with an infant, it's really about cueing into their tiredness, the cue, so that you're not trying to play. When you think it's
still a bit
playtime,
reactive to them.
That's right, you definitely have to. But as they're older and they converse with you, and you can see their triggers, you know, when they're getting tired, but apart from that, you know, your routine, like if you've got that structure, it's beautiful.
You might think, oh, I'm just going to wear this for 20 minutes.
Because
someone's rubbing their eyes.
Someone's
non-stop.
A bit tired. That's right. And you're best going with the most tired of the two, aren't you?
Still can't read the clock, so they don't really know it's 5 instead of 5:30 where we first start.
That's good.
They've been very good. What general tips could you give people? I know we've spoken about context, but.
I suppose is really look at your day, and because a lot of parents are very busy and they might be factoring their work commitments as well as their partner's work commitments, family support. So really look at what is achievable in that day. We do try, I still believe, and do too much as parents. And as you said, what kicks in is the guilt. What I'm not able to achieve in that day. So really look at what is reasonable. I think your expectation. We find the biggest thing here is expectations. Our expectations as parents are very high. Very few parents come in and go, no, I don't mind, it's okay, you know, but really we expect a lot of ourselves. So I think the key thing is, if you can, step back a bit. Parenting's the most beautiful time. It goes so quickly. Infants are not little for long.
Mm.
So the tip is bring the enjoyment back in parenting. Don't feel guilty about having not settled tonight, having not done this, not stuck to the routine, got up during the night, I shouldn't have. You know, that's history. Leave it where it is.
Yep.
Move on, I think. Draw in good support. And I've always said, surround yourself with like-minded people, people that can support you, not bring you down either. So, you know, if you're not in a great place, you need to have people around you that really will keep you going and lift you, as you would with others. So I think that's really helpful as a parent.
I was really lucky that way too.
Yes, that's good. That's excellent. So if you don't have a network, a parenting group or anything, sometimes create your own, and that's why often people do seek the net out for that reason too. So I think it's about, and what am I saying, looking after the parents, because if the parents are okay, and if you and your partner, if you're not sole parenting, are working on similar pages most of the time, then you're doing a great job.
Excellent. One of the little things that I really got out of this was the lack of electronic stimuli before bed. We used to let the kids. Mm. We were to the point where, you know, such a fight to get them into bed.
Right.
We used to let them watch TV to calm them down. But I don't actually,
look at research on TV and under 3-year-olds in particular, or even I think under preschoolers, kindy age.
Yeah.
There's a lot of research out there, and you'll find very quickly that it's just too stimulating.
Oh, no, we agree. We're so behind that now.
And for ourselves, why should we sit in front of the TV before we go to bed at night? We really should even go to bed and grab a good book or, you know, there's other things. We shouldn't be so attached to the TV. It just stimulates you, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
But that routine you talked about is perfect. If you set up a routine, what's different to us? We go to bed at night. We like certain things for us to get to sleep. We all have sleep associations. Why aren't our children going to have sleep associations? As long as ours, I would say, are portable, that if you do a lot of travelling, if you need to take the same pillow every time, you've got to have a certain temperature of the room, you've got to have a fan on, you need the door open, and
a certain sound, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes it more difficult. So don't set it up.
It's just keys and triggers.
Yeah, yeah. So don't have that bunny that's only got one ear that doesn't get washed, and you leave it on your trip when you're heading away for 6 weeks. And
Don't talk to us about those two dollies. No.
Oh, we can't. I didn't know that.
No, they've got two dollies that they've had since they were one day old. And
they're beautiful.
I've already tried to find replacements, and they don't make them anymore. And it's like, oh, yeah. We lost an ear the other day, and Grandma had to sew it back on. And
But I mean, there's positives to that too. They're attached to them. I mean, as much as it's just setting up, just aware that we have sleep associations. TV is stimulating. Look in your house, what stimulates them. And sometimes it's, you know, it can be even the animals or the pets or something, you know, that might be running around the house, and it's just get them out, quiet time, set up a quiet environment. And if you're both come home from work and busy, or your wife comes home and you know, like to have your chat, say that till when they've gone to bed. That's stimulating. You know, that engaging. That's just some quiet time, like you've said, the book. Do your teeth, the book, little storyline there, have a chat, make up a story. Doesn't have to be on paper.
No, we do our puzzles. Basically, it's no more television, then we sit and we play some puzzles while we make dinner, and then we have dinner, we sit and talk, make them sit at the table now.
That's perfect.
Then we either talk or go to the shower straight away, shower bath, play around the bath. Come out, do our sticker books, which we've been doing since we so all the positive reinforcement of sitting at the table before.
And immediately, like very soon after.
Yes, soon after that, so they attach it. And then we read.
Yeah.
And we get to one book, we say, one more, no more. And Rhapsody, the bad sleeper, actually, then that book, she jumps up and says, okay.
See, she has some control over that, that's lovely.
Yeah. Gypsy says, carry me. But that's okay. Is there anything else that you think that mum and dads need to know, or that I've forgotten, left out?
I just think don't be too hard on yourself. Yeah. Because it is it's hard work, but it's the most rewarding work you'll do. Something that every book would tell you. We don't see anything different here. We see families on our mission day that come in and they, you know, have hopes and dreams, and hopefully by the end of the journey that some of them, you know, they're feeling positive about a lot of the stay here. But they continue with that work when they go home, and you know,
I came in hopeful, but I wasn't expecting much.
I was
over the moon.
Or sometimes one person's very keen, the other isn't. It's not always mum either. You know, sometimes it's dad sees mum as really worn out, really exhausted. He really wants her here. Or, you know, mum is really frustrated and says, I really need to get this sorted. And dad's doesn't see it as, you know, the priority. But if we can get both on board, most of the hard work's done, isn't it?
Because some people have got the notion the babies, of course. That sleep sleep deprivation comes with it. There's nothing to be done about
it. That's right, but we say if it's not a problem, it's not a problem. Mm. So if you come in with other issues, we're really looking at sleep. If there are other things that we think could be looked at, if it's not an issue, it's not an issue. And that's why there are so many families out there that are doing all different sorts of things, but they're happy.
One of my friends has just written a book in called The Gift of Sleep in conjunction with a nurse. I think she was basically roughly close to your experience, actually.
Yeah.
And one of the things she says is it's not for everyone.
That's right.
It's if what you're doing is working for you.
Yes.
We're not telling you to do it our way. No. This is just a set of strategies that may work for you, may not work for you.
That's why there's more than one book on the market.
They're getting a lot of all this hate from the attachment brigade at the moment, and they keep going, but we're not saying what you're doing is right or wrong.
Yeah.
We're just saying that here's ways to get your kids to sleep.
because there's many parents out there saying, I'm not happy. I've got to the point where this has become a problem, this has become an issue, or things have changed in our life now. A new baby's coming on board, or one's going off to school. My husband's changed jobs. We're moving away from family. There's all these sorts of, all of a sudden, something comes up and we go, we need to do something now.
Excellent.
So, yeah, I hope that's been of some help.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are.
No, that's all right. Part of my day, and it's lovely. It's an opportunity for to sit and talk about what I love and what we enjoy doing.
That's something else that I mentioned before. I was like, the passion that you've all got here is just lovely. Great. It's probably a little bit infectious.
We're very lucky because, you know, a lot of us have worked in many, many areas in our nursing career, and you come here and you think, someone's looking after us.
How many of those are in Queensland? Is this the
only one? Only centre in Queensland. There's two in New South Wales. There's two in Victoria. Actually, there's three. There's Tweddle and O'Connell and Queen Elizabeth Centre. So there's three in Victoria. Caratani, Tresillian, you might have heard, they're New South Wales. There's ACT, Queen Elizabeth the second, QE2. Mm-hmm. Then Torrens House is in South Australia. Western Australia's Nagala. That's it. That's it. Northern Territory we cover, and so does Western Australia. And no Tassie.
No Tassie.
No. But we link in very carefully. We have 3 monthly teleconferences with all the centres.
Mm-hmm.
So representatives from each centre, we all link in. Karen goes to the Australian Association, so they meet every year and research papers put out. If there's anything I need to know, I'll just get on straight away to my cohort.
And this is not for publication.
No.
Is there much variation? Because I know
this is it. There's not,
because being state run.
We work so carefully. We benchmark against each other. When we link in, particularly, we're looking at what are you doing about this. What are you different processes throughout our day to process areas like this. What are they doing? And so we grab from each other, and very much the same. That's the idea, is that you should be able to go to every centre and be able to do it. I know one of the centres is also setting up rooms where I think the infant can actually be with the parent in the same room. Well, we just move a cot in here. So that wasn't really new for us, because we had a purpose-built new centre that we could move into from our very old centre at Riverton. We can move the cot in if we have to. So that wasn't ever really an issue, where they're starting to look at having the bed and the cot fairly close together.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's good to see, because it doesn't happen enough. But
there's nothing outside of Australia. That's what's interesting. No other country.
Really?
No parenting centres. No, we're very, very...
Oh, because that's something that Karen asked. She said, oh, is there anything over here? And I've gone, I don't know, but I'll ask when I go in.
There's only... And we think, one in the States, it's certainly not enough. We really need... further north, and we do have, because we have child health nurses from all around Queensland that come, this one working with us this week, so they come and just do supernumerary work with us to learn what we do, so they can take that back to their centres and work the way we work, because when we publish, because so much this, of this, that's is, for them too. They
so can much of this is just behavioural management. It's not even,
it is.
I'm not putting it down there, but it's not complicated.
But often processes like that seem complicated aren't.
Not.
They base themselves on very basic information, and that's exactly what it is.
Okay. Thank you so much. Your
pleasure.
For your time.
Pleasure. Now, really did you want me to give you some copies?
Would you mind?
Copies of that?
That would be wonderful.
We've got spare copies at the top, so I'll be back.